Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. A very impressive young woman is Aisling. You couldn't help but be impressed by her. There was disappointment in our house last night. Not really. But back on December the 11th, 2022, we applied for a Guinness Book of Records. So Tom said to me one day, he said, I wonder how many sticky post-its has ever been put on a bass guitar. I said, I don't know, Tom. He said, I'm going to do it. I want to get a world record for the most sticky notes stuck on a bass guitar. And I said, fine, because you just do, that's what you do as a dad, don't you? You just entertain these ideas. So we went about doing it. We videoed it and then we applied. And I don't know if you've ever applied for a Guinness World Record, but there's you have to jump through a few hoops. So you go on their website, you have to fill in all the details, and you have two options. You can get an answer within a number of days, which costs a few hundred euro, or you can wait for 12 weeks and pay €5. So we went for the latter option. So we submitted our record attempt for the most sticky notes stuck onto a bass guitar. And over the last 12 weeks, since December 11th, there have been a number of questions. Did we get an email? Did we get? No, we didn't. Did we? And it arrived yesterday. Yeah, it arrived yesterday. So this is the email from the Guinness Book of World Records. Dear Ray Darcy, thank you for sending us the details of your proposed record attempt for the most sticky notes stuck onto a bass guitar. Unfortunately, after thoroughly reviewing your application with members of our research team, we are afraid to say that we cannot accept your proposal as a Guinness World Record title. And it goes on to explain that our team of expert record managers receive thousands of new record proposals every year from all over the world. Of course they do. Each of these proposals are carefully assessed in order to determine whether they meet a stringent set of criteria. Every record verified must reflect a level of existing competition in a particular field and be measurable by a single superlative. I love that one. Be measurable by a single superlative. Fantastic. I thought it was fantastic. There's a superlative. Anyway, be verifiable, standardizable, breakable, and clearly present an element of skill. Therefore, record titles are not created to suit an individual proposal. As we've been unable to establish any particular competition in this instance, we are not currently considering a record title which fits your proposal. So there you go, the bad news. Came into our house last night. But we were glum for about 2 seconds and then we went off and made an alternative record, world record, and it's going to be framed and be put up in the bedroom and all will be well. Congratulations to Paul Mescal. Paul Mescal, news just in, has got nominated for Best Actor in the Olivier Awards for his role in A Streetcar Named Desire. You probably know this already, but the Olivier Awards are the UK's most prestigious awards ceremony for live theatre, honouring excellence on the London stage. They were established back in 1976, and this year's ceremony will take place on Sunday, 2nd of April. So well done to Paul. It's a big year, 2 years for him. Amazing. And he'll be delighted with that one of all awards because most actors, you know, the theatre seems to be the thing, doesn't it? Because you're there every night and you have to do it every night as opposed to doing five takes and choosing the best one. Nuala Holloway was on to ray@rte.ie. She says, I hope you can remember Dermot Morgan on your show today as this date marks the 25th anniversary of his premature passing. I had the great honour of working with Dermot in the early 1980s, playing the part of Sister Concepta on the live mic. I remember both of us flying up and down the Slorgajul carriageway on an old Honda 50 motorbike back in the day when there were less safety regulations for the actors. He was tremendous, fun at all times, and we stayed friends right up until the time he died. He is greatly missed by all who knew him well. That's Nuala Holloway. He died at the age of 45, 25 years ago. Will we go Father Ted first or Father Trendy first? Maybe Father Ted first. So this is Dermot Morgan as Father Ted, and Ardal O'Hanlon as Dougal.
Does he have much of a family?
Yes, his parents are alive, and he has a brother, I think, a doctor in America.
A doctor, wow.
You wouldn't believe that, would you? But that used to be quite common, you know. The favourite son would become a doctor, and then the idiot brother would be sent off to the priesthood.
Your brother's a doctor, isn't he?
Yes.
And of course, Father Ted was more than loosely based on Father Trendy, who was a regular feature on the Live Mike show. And he used all sorts of mad analogies to explain life and morals to the Irish public.
You know, in ways, we're motorbikes on the road to life. We've got to learn to take a firm grip on ourselves and at the same time, get a kick out of things. We've also got to make sure that we don't put too much juice in ourselves. You know, some men can't go into pubs without staying all night and filling up. In other words, they can't handle bars. You know, motorbikes may need to be well oiled, but you don't. So be a motorbike, be a triumph. A triumph of good over evil. And maybe your religion needs a BMW. A bit more work.
There you go. The late Dermot Morgan there as Father Trendy. Yesterday we spoke to Colly Ennis and we played him this. And he laughed at our frog noises, saying that, no, their frog's okay, but there's some exotic frog from some other part of the world. So I said to him, will you send us in some recordings of Irish frogs? Well, there isn't such a thing as an Irish frog, but the frogs that we have here in this country are European common frogs. And this is what they sound like, thanks to Colly Ennis. Thanks, Colly. Sort of an ominous sound, that, isn't it? Have you ever heard about the Suzuki Omnicord? It was one of those synthesizer, weird-looking instruments from the early 1980s. Sort of kidney-shaped, about 2 foot wide and 1.5 foot high. And had all sorts of settings on it for drum machines and keyboards. And then, I suppose, the unique thing it had was sonic strings. Sort of a synthetic electronic harp. Anyway, the reason I'm telling you about this is that it comes up and it's big news in the music industry because Damon Albarn, frontman from Blur and also part of Gorillaz, was giving an interview which was available to watch or read over the weekend, and he shared with Zane Lowe, who was interviewing him, that one of their biggest hits came directly from the Suzuki Omnicord. When I say directly from, it was one of those preset things. You know, when you get one of the keyboards, you just press the button and it has a preset thing on it. So he's telling your man, Zane Lowe, about this. Here you go.
It just came like that.
That's it. That's the preset. It's the Rock One preset.
But it gets even more. Wholesale.
That's the whole
wholesale
song.
Finally.
Yeah. There you go. He rubbed it wholesale. Because that's the song there.
I ain't happy. I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long.
A lot of people were expressing disappointment that Damon just went to a little synthesizer type thing from the 1980s and robbed the song. And others were saying, well, that was available there for everybody who had a Suzuki Omnicord, and only the genius of Damon Albarn took it and made it into a hit record. You decide. I was on looking to see if I could buy a Suzuki Omnicord. They're selling between 350 and 650 euro, and now that he's mentioned them, I'd say they'll go through the roof, the price of them. We were talking yesterday in the office about the fact that, I don't know if you've felt this, about Mondays. That Mondays have become a bit like Friday afternoons, that there's very little activity on email and it's hard to get people. Have you noticed that? I don't know if you have. And lo and behold then, I read that there's this bare minimum Monday. It's the latest workplace trying to sweep, you guessed it, TikTok. Yay! Marisa Joe. She has over 150,000 followers on TikTok. She popularised the phrase with a series of posts that criticise angst-filled preparation for the work week. Of course, we call it the fear. You know, the Glen Rose. Homework done, lunch is made. You know, it's when you're looking forward to the week that's ahead of you, and it's overwhelming sometimes because 5 days in a row. Anyway, Joe, Marisa Joe, encourages workers to do as little as possible at work on Mondays, restoring their energy and focusing on other interests. Would that not be the weekends, Marissa? She says it helps her avoid the dread and pressure that many people feel when returning to work on Mondays. This is a direct quote. It's really a way to start the week prioritising yourself as a person over yourself as an employee. I'll just go on to the next one. A letter by from Dr. Aidan Hampson caught our attention. It's in The Independent today. And it's a sort of so-see-all of us type letter. It says, I recently had the pleasure of talking to two young people. Without doubt, you cannot beat these young people for their manners and their ability to communicate. A bit like Aisling on Liveline today. This is down to a very underestimated person in our society, the Irish mammy, says Aidan. I don't know if they're underestimated at all. Anyway, it was William Wordsworth who said, the child is the father of the man, but it is mainly the mother who instills these virtues in her children, many times forsaking her own career to be there for her family. We talk about how successful this country has become, how we have great entrepreneurs and a stable country, but we must remember that it all starts in the home, with the greatest teachers of all, our mothers, who learnt it from their own mothers, and so on. Dr. Aidan Hampson, Artane, Dublin 5, and so say all of us. This is a clever mother. This is a really clever mother. You know, you're probably sick of hearing about social media and screen time and access to computers and laptops and iPads and all this sort of thing. And oftentimes, if you get young people coming into your house, the first question they ask you is not, how are you? Or where's the loo? It's, what's the password? What's the Wi-Fi password? That's the first thing they want to know so they can get online. Anyway, this particular mother has incentivized her children. So she changes the Wi-Fi password in the house every day. Oh God, would you be bothered? So she changes it every day. And then she puts up a sign. She goes, today's Wi-Fi password can be unlocked by texting a photo of a clean kitchen to mom. That's her. Said photograph must contain one box of crackers on the counter by the stove. And that's to prevent them using old photographs. Thank you for playing. May the odds be ever in your favour. That's a reference, I believe, to The Hunger Games. Love, Mum. What do you think of that? There's an idea for, I don't know. It seems like an awful lot of work changing the Wi-Fi password every day, but it might. I don't know. We'll be chatting to Laura DeBarra today after 4 o'clock. And today we're focusing in on clothes. And there is a lot about washing your clothes that you don't know. There's a lot about fabric, conditioner and softener that you don't know, but Laura DeBarra does know. So if you have any questions about how often you should wash your clothes, should you put fabric softener in with towels, I can tell you now, no is the answer. Loads of other things. Anyway, Laura's going to be with us after 4 o'clock. ray@rte.ie. She is the gaff goddess and knows a lot of things about clothes, housing, smells, all that sort of thing. So any questions for Laura to ray@rte.ie. Tell Tom there'll be loads more records for him to break in life, not needing documentation. Dermot Morgan would have phrased that better. Thinking of him today, says Anne. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Heard this recently, and it's featured in the Elvis movie, which is getting a lot of attention now because Austin Butler won the BAFTA and may win the Oscar. But this is from his 1968 comeback special. And earlier that year, Martin Luther King had been assassinated. And Elvis and his team of songwriters, I think, wrote this to honour and commemorate the great civil rights leader, Martin Luther King. And now we use it in the Lotto ad. Whoa! Exceptional. Elvis Presley. And If I Can Dream, news just in for sports fans. Katie Taylor's rematch with Amanda Serrano, scheduled for Dublin on May 20th, has been postponed. Serrano has picked up an injury in training. And both sides are talking about the possibility of rescheduling the fight for later in the year. And Katie Taylor's camp remain hopeful that some sort of a fight with some other opponent will still go ahead in Dublin on May 20th. So there you go on that. OK, we're looking for two contestants for our Who Done It quiz. Yeah, two people, three Who Done It questions each on music, sport, books, films, politics, comedy, TV. Like all Who Done It, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get two. And if you answer with a clue, you get one, because it's easier. And there is a prize. And it's a two-night stay for two people in one of the I Knew It Collection four-star hotels, with breakfast each morning and dinner on an evening of your choice for you and a guest. So you can kick back in Kilkenny's chic Hibernian Hotel Taste the magic in the Tullamore Court Hotel or relax in the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan. Also the Fairways Hotel in Dundalk or any one of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. Something for everyone to enjoy, from overnight getaways and spa treatments to elegant afternoon teas and delicious meals. Inua.ie, I-N-U-A.ie. OK, here's your qualifying question on this Tuesday afternoon. Courtney Cox has gotten a Hollywood Walk of Fame star. Did she star as Monica in Friends or in Enemies? Courtney Cox has gotten a Hollywood Walk of Fame star. Did she star as Monica in Friends or in Enemies? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Paul has been on. He says the Guinness Book of Records contains the tallest, smallest person, etc. Where exactly is the skill in being very short or very tall? Ask Paul. Yes, you're right, Paul. I'm with you on that one. Now, we're heading over to our Cork studio to speak to Maeve Dennehy, who has uncovered something rather unexpected. Good afternoon, Maeve.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
We have the retention, I think. It's Maeve's mystery in the afternoon. Thanks for coming in. Whereabouts in Cork are you from?
I'm from Mayfield, but live down in Ballyhay near Charleville.
Right, okay.
So down near Limerick, but right. Still in Cork.
And you spotted something that was put up on social media. What mm-hmm. was it?
To be honest, I didn't spot it.
Oh, did you not?
No. A friend of mine sent me a screenshot of it maybe 2 weeks ago, and it was a picture of a diary from 1967 with my mum's maiden name and address in it. A woman had posted it on a Facebook page saying she had found it in a bag, and did anybody know the owner? And to cut a long story short, a couple of people belonging to my mum, her first cousin, her brother had spotted it and told the lady that I owned a business, a clothes shop, and the woman was good enough to just post it down directly to me.
Aha.
Yeah.
Now, you didn't give all the details about where exactly it was found. It was found in a bag, but it sounds to me like it was secreted away, hidden.
Yeah, so it landed in the shop, and I got the lady's name on Facebook and sent her a message and just said, you know, thanks so much, and can you give me a bit more detail? Obviously, I'm curious. My mum will be gone 5 years coming up in about 5 weeks' time. So I was dying to know the story. Mm. And she told me that a year ago she bought the bag in a charity shop. But only a couple of weeks ago she went, like there was another compartment inside the bag and went to take that out and found this little diary. And it's lovely, like there's little snippets of my mum's life. My mum would have been 22 at the time.
Oh, great, great.
Yeah. Interesting, do you know what I mean? Yes. Obviously, I won't be telling you all of it, but it's...
I was promised I was getting all of it.
No, that's for me and me only.
Yeah.
But it's lovely. It's very interesting. It's just little snippets of everyday life, you know?
Yeah, so Maeve O'Flynn, John Street, 1967.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, the bits that you can tell us.
Yeah, of course.
So what was she doing back in... Was she working or...
She was working. She was living at home and in John Street, and she was working in a place called Melina. I think they used to do beauty products.
Right.
Weirdly, in the diary, she went to mass every day, and I would have never considered my mum very religious, but that's interesting. And and going to dance halls, going to bingo, you know, having nights in with her friends, ringing my dad, like John Dunn has mentioned in it.
Because it's O'Flynn, they weren't married at that stage.
No, they weren't. No. They weren't married till she was 25, so it would have been 3 years later. And I don't think they were even a couple at that stage. I think he was on the scene, I'll say. Do you know that kind of...
He was in the friend zone before the friend zone even existed.
He was there somewhere anyway. Yeah, exactly.
And confiding in her diary back in 1967, was she saying nice things about your dad?
Oh God, yeah. There's nobody who would say bad things about my dad. But yeah, it was lovely. It was just, it's more that he's mentioning that she phones him or, you know, like went on a day out to Cross Avon with him, you know, which seems like such a big thing then, whereas now you just pop down there, you know.
How far is Crosshaven from Cork?
Like it's only 15 minutes from Cork now, but I suppose it would have been a trip away at that stage, you know.
But phoning somebody and going for a day out, it was back in 1967, that was serious. That was a line, I would say.
Yeah. My mum was fun. My mum was out having fun and going to dance halls and everything else.
Right.
And like I said, my dad is mentioned, but I don't think they were doing serious line at that stage.
So they weren't exclusive, as they say now.
But it's lovely. It's just really interesting to see her day-to-day life, you know?
Yeah, and you've read it cover to cover, have you?
It's quite sporadic. Like some weeks she'll put an entry in every day and then there's nothing for a few weeks. And it's not... in depth, you know the way people are all into journaling these days, yes, and all of that. It's not like that at all. It's literally a kind of, I got up at 7:30, went to mass, you know,
yeah,
saw Kay.
Who's got, Kay?
Kay would have been one of our friends. Yeah. Sent a letter to Kitty. Kitty would have been one of our friends that lived in England.
Right.
It's more that. It's more her kind of day-to-day routine. Yeah. But it's just lovely to see. Obviously, I feel like she's, you know.
We sort of, and this is, we're all guilty, mm-hmm, of this, I think. You know, we see our parents not as our parents, mm-hmm, and not as individuals who had lives before we existed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
And this gives you a lovely window into.
And it's actually, yeah, you're so right. You forget that they were once, you know, young and carefree.
Yes.
And no, it's absolutely lovely. Now, my mum would have been a very open and honest person anyway, and would tell me things, you know, and has done over the years. But I suppose, you know, when you lose people, you kind of, you miss that link or that connection of, you know, the little snippets. I suppose I really listen to things my dad says now because I'm like, I might not hear these again. But you don't sometimes, and particularly when I was younger, maybe now I do. So to have this at this age where I value it, and it's really interesting.
And your mum, you say, died 5 mm-hmm. years ago.
Yeah.
And you lost your sister, Karen.
Karen, my sister, would have died at 39.
10 years ago.
10 years ago, yeah. This month, actually, yeah.
Right, okay.
In March, yeah, at 39, so.
And you were trying to have children through all of that as well. So
yeah, I suppose it's been a busy few years, but I suppose and that's where I was coming from with the diary. I massively believe they look after me. Ever since Karen passed, I believe she looks after me. I've had a lot of luck in my life over the years. In business and at home, and when I went to have children, then we had some difficulty. But I had my son Ned. He's 5 now, and he was obviously brought massive joy to all our family. You know, he was the first grandchild on both sides.
Yeah.
And long story short, my mother fell ill 3 months later, and was only sick for 5 weeks before she died. So,
circle of life, huh?
Oh, that's exactly what it is, you know. But before she passed in the hospital, I found out that I was pregnant naturally, and I had a little girl, Molly. So I do believe they sent me a little girl. And I kind of believe that my mum sent me this diary, and in a weird way, because it's coming up to a tough time for all of us, my brother and my dad, and now I have this little gift again, you know. I don't know.
I choose to
believe that all these lovely things happen to me, and I'm going to continue that way.
that's brilliant, because they're 5 and 10, you know, they're two significant anniversaries.
They're
sort of 24th of March, I'm looking here, and 12th of April. So they're back to back.
Yeah, they are.
So it will be tough. So this is a lovely little sliver of light, more than a sliver of light, isn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely. And it's just, I don't know, I just feel like I feel like sometimes you get a little nudge in the shoulder just to say we're here, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Now sometimes I completely push my luck, like parking a minute ago. I'm like, come on now, give me a parking space, you know, the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I completely push my luck, but I do believe that you have a choice. You know, you have a choice when you lose people to believe they're there.
And Jenny, my wife, she always asks her dad for help.
See?
The parking space,
and I bet
yes.
you she gets it. And just in business and everything, I've had a good few. I have a lot to be thankful for, and I do think they look after me.
Fair dues to your mum, Maeve, because it's particularly difficult to get parking around the RTE Cork studios, isn't it?
You have to believe, Ray.
Yes,
you
I know.
Need to
I've
believe.
I've been there, but you believe. Yeah.
I don't know if you ever heard that saying, Holy Mary, full of grace, help me find this parking space. There you go. You need to say that the next day.
Yeah. So the business is a boutique in whereabouts is that?
I actually hate that word. I think it sounds really doesn't it? No,
yes.
It doesn't it though, but it is. It's Love Cherish Boutique. It's in Charleville. I have it 11 years. I actually had just opened it when my sister passed.
Right.
We opened it. I had it 6 months when she passed away. So obviously that was a struggle, but then there was a lot of success came with the store. And again, I put a lot of it down to her and of course my hard work.
Yeah.
And now I have, I'm 11 years in business. There's 16 of us working there, and it's a good business. You know, we have a strong online and have the store still in Charleville that I love.
16 working.
Yeah.
And you've your own range as well, I believe.
Yeah, I suppose we had an online business, and like we grew on social media, and then maybe 5 years ago we set up the online properly, but then during COVID I suppose people knew us and trusted us, and it just really really took off.
Right.
So we have a separate warehouse now for the online, and during COVID as well I was kind of losing the will to live like everyone else, and felt that there was an opportunity there for clothing, kind of casual but a little step up from the leggings and hoodies that we all wore.
Okay.
Got onto an agency in Dubai. There's a Kerry woman, Maura Morris, runs an agency in Dubai that design clothing, and brought out my own collection, and I'm on season 4 now and
Molly.
Loving it. Oh, Molly, yeah, I love it. Yeah, after my little girl.
Look at you. Yeah. Now, what does your dad think of the diary? Has he read it?
He hasn't read it yet. I only have it a week.
All right.
I'm meeting him now after this, actually. I only have it a week, so I haven't shown it to him yet. My dad is a very practical man, adores my mother, adored my mother, still adores my mother. I would imagine, knowing my dad, he won't want to read it. You know, he has all those memories. Do you know what I mean? He knows what my mother was like when she met him. He constantly talks about how fabulous she was, how stylish she was. You know, he'd always say she stood out from the crowd, that she had a great personality as well. And, you know, so I think, knowing my dad, he'd obviously, we'll discuss it, but I'd say he'll just sit with that memory. But he thinks it's lovely. You know, he kind of laughs at me believing in half the things I do, but he goes along with me.
Yeah, I'm glad that one of our texters spotted what I spotted.
Tell me.
Yeah, Maeve sounds so lovely. She's the voice double of...
Oh, God, who?
Go on.
I don't know.
Lily Higgins.
Oh, yeah, I'll check that. Yeah. I had a moment there of what is going to come at me.
It's that lovely warmth and sense of humour that comes across.
Thank you so much. Bucket loads. Thank you.
Super female Cork accent.
And it's funny because down in Charleville, people would mock me for having a city accent.
Would
and
they?
In the city, I would get mocked for having a country accent.
Right, okay.
So you can't win, Ray.
Well, it's brilliant. So, look, if you're available for voice work, I can. I'll take 10%. I'll record a little show reel for you.
I'm here for it. Like.
Right, okay.
Thank you so much.
Well, listen, do you want to give that lady a mention or who found the
Her
the
name, I don't know her well, but her name was Julianne Pardy, and it was extremely nice of her because, like I said, she posted it to the store without even asking me, and it was just so kind of her. She even offered to give me the bag afterwards, which obviously I didn't want, but she's obviously a lovely person and I really, really appreciate it.
All right, have you done the maths? How many years ago was 1967?
A long time ago. I'd be like, I was born in the 1980s. I don't know.
56 years ago.
Is
56
it?
Years ago. Yeah, well, I know that because I was born in the
60s. I was 60s, just so going to say, how do you know that?
There you go, there, right. Now, before we fall out, I'll say goodbye to you, Maeve Denny.
Thanks for your
time.
Okay,
see you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, and joined in studio by Sean O'Reilly. Sean was up at the crack of dawn this morning serving flat whites and Americanos to warm up the sea swimmers at the Rise at the Cove in Greystones, County Wicklow. It's a cafe linked to the Tiglan Treatment Centre. It's a far cry from what life used to be like for Sean, who battled addiction from his teens, but has come out the other side. Good afternoon, Sean.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Thanks for coming in.
No problem.
So what time were you in work this morning at?
7:30.
Right,
I had a lie-in this morning.
Did you? Right. Yeah. What's your usual start time?
6:30.
Okay. And you serve flat whites and Americanos. And I believe your favourite drink of choice is an oatmeal cortado.
Yeah.
What is an oatmeal cortado?
It's just like a half-size flat white.
Right.
Just a little tiny cup.
With oat milk.
Yeah.
Why oat milk? Right.
Why not?
This is a generalisation, but I'd say there's a big demand for all sorts of different milks out in Greystones. Yeah,
sure is.
What range have you got?
We just do oat milk.
Oh, you just do oat milk.
And regular milk.
No soya.
No.
No. And the list of other things you don't do is just oat milk.
Just
fair enough.
Milk,
right. Okay. Well, we'll talk about Tiglan, but let's start before that. So you're from Swords originally.
Yeah, from Swords. Yeah.
Right. Can you remember the first time you smoked weed or?
Yeah, it was probably about 14, 15.
Right. And you were in secondary school?
Yeah.
And was everybody doing it?
Yeah.
And was it peer group pressure or was it something you aspired to do?
No, like at the end of the day, it's your own choice, really.
Hmm.
You know.
And I know we know all that now, but I'm just trying to get back into your 14-year-old head.
Yeah, like it's people, places and things. Like, so it's the surroundings around you. If you're around people that do them type of things, you have a good chance of following suit, like, you know, just to fit in.
Mm. So you were smoking weed and most of your mates were doing it?
Yeah.
Okay. Then what happened next?
Well, like, I suppose, you know, you'd be drinking on the weekends, you know, as a young lad and getting up to all sorts. But then that kind of went on for a year or two. You know, I wouldn't have done any other drugs. I was about 16, 17 then. Yeah, progressed, you know, onto the party scene. When you're a teenager, every teenager does it. You know, they go through that phase of, you know, going out partying to the pubs, nightclubs. I done that too, but I took a liking to it, you know, very quick.
And the drug of choice in the party scene, as you describe it, is what?
Would have been like the cocaine, you know, and the other party drugs that come with it, like
ecstasy.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And can you remember the first time you did cocaine?
Yeah, I was about 16. Yeah.
And did you go in search of it, or was it offered to you?
Would have been readily available.
Readily available, right? Yeah. So you didn't have to do much searching.
No.
No, right. And again, were, you know, people in your circle doing it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So then it's cocaine, and it was, I'd imagine at the beginning it was weekend, as you say, party.
Yeah, probably could have been once every 2 weeks, you know. Okay. Wouldn't have been that often, like.
And were you still at secondary school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just about.
Right. And how was that going for you?
Not good. You know, me and school didn't go.
Why not?
Me. Because of me, yeah, the way I was. I had more interest of doing other things. School was my last choice, you know. So,
what were the other things you'd interested
in? Well, I would have rather go on the Mitch from school and go out and get stoned all day with my friends and do them things, like, you know, yeah. which I did do, like.
Yeah. And was school difficult for you?
Yeah, very difficult.
Why do you think?
Suppose, like, now I know I had a big problem with authority.
Right.
In my life, so people telling me what to do didn't go down well.
And where did that come from? Any idea?
I suppose it's just from a young age. I was always like that. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I just rebelled a bit, like.
Right. So you rebelled against your parents?
Oh,
did you?
Everyone.
Everyone.
Yeah.
You're just kicking against the world.
Yeah.
Raging against the machine. Yeah.
It was everybody else's fault but me own.
Right. Okay, so 16 then, you're going out at the weekend, and every odd weekend you're having a couple of lines of coke or whatever, and it progresses.
Yeah, yeah. So kind of went on further to, you know, staying out on the weekends, then you'd be staying out 3 days of the week, then 4 days of the week, 5 days of the week, and then didn't take too long to catch up. When it gets a grasp on you, then you're using this drug 7 days a week, day in, day out.
Right.
All day, every day.
How do you finance that?
Well, it will put you in some financial difficulty anyway. That's right. That's what
and
I'd
awkward
say.
Situations.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd imagine situations that you prefer you weren't in.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we know that. You know, when you're an addict, you do things that
things you're not proud of, and
yeah,
that's for sure.
And I would imagine for your family, watching you go down this road, that was horrible for them.
Yeah, it was very tough for them, all right. But I suppose for years they fought with me about things, and as I said, I was very rebellious. So that would only go on for so long, and then they just had to let me. Just to let me go and do my thing, like, you know. Because I wasn't going to listen to them regardless, like. But, like, the sad thing about addiction is it'll tear you apart, but it will also tear everyone apart around you, which I learned the hard way.
Mm. Because they, like, your mum and dad saw you, a baby, changed your nappy, you know.
Yeah.
And now cut to you as a 16, 17-year-old, and they know you're out doing cocaine. And I suppose part of you, in their eyes, still a baby. That's horrible, isn't it, for them? But, you know, you know that now.
Yeah. I suppose, like, it wasn't as if, you know, they weren't turning a blind eye to it, and, like, you know.
They were doing their best for you.
Yeah, like, yeah. They weren't happy about things. But at the end of the day, as I said to you, like, I done what I wanted.
Yeah.
And, like, I wasn't going to listen to anybody else.
So 7 days a week.
Towards the end of my addiction, yeah, like.
Because, you mentioned the party, and cocaine is probably known.
It's probably one of the top party drugs, yeah.
Yeah, ridiculous. Anyway, because the party sort of goes pear-shaped fairly quickly, I think, as it did for you.
Yeah.
I suppose the image is that it's a social drug.
Yeah.
Would you have done it on your own?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so it's the complete opposite. It starts off as that.
As this social drug,
yeah.
Right.
But, like, some people can do it sociably. Some people can't. And that was me. I couldn't, you know. I soon learned that not too long onto the journey I was on. It took a hold of me, like. I suppose, with it being down to an addictive personality, I suppose, like. I took a liking to it, and that was it.
So you would do it on your own in your bedroom or wherever you were?
Yeah, right. Towards the end of my addiction, yeah. And that's that's the sad part of addiction as well, because it's like you're doing the things you don't want to do, but you're still doing them.
And how do you reconcile that in your head? It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very hard. It's a hard question to answer.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, I'll put it this way then. Like, because I'm trying to get into your head. So you're 7 days a week, you find yourself in a room on your own doing a line of coke. You know, looking back, that's a pretty sad enough
image, isn't it? It's a very dark place to be, mentally.
Yeah. So I'm wondering I'm trying to figure out what's the... Because we all have this chat that goes on in our head, don't we?
Yeah.
The voices that are telling us this and that and feel that. So what were they in your head?
So the best way to explain it is you're talking to yourself about yourself, fighting about yourself.
Yeah.
Constantly. The self-doubt in yourself, you know, and it's not a good place to be for anybody.
Are you telling yourself to stop doing this cocaine? Yeah. Of course you are. Yeah.
Whilst you're doing it.
Yeah.
You know.
And when you look in the mirror then, can you remember that?
Like, at the time, I didn't care. You know, right. I was self-destruct mode, so I just completely given up. Towards the end of my time, like,
giving up on yourself, or?
Yeah, I had just submitted. I says, you know what? If this is what it's meant to be for me, well, that's what it is.
So this is your life,
yeah,
a cocaine addict.
You know, and that's sad.
Mm.
But when you're stuck up in that turmoil of chaos, like, you don't see a way out, like, you know.
And I'm wondering where you, because this is an expression that comes up more and more now, you know, it's getting out of your head. But the getting out of your head is literally sort of, there's something in there that you want to run away from.
Yeah.
Was there?
Possibly, yeah. Well, like, you know, we'll kind of get to it as when you go through things.
Take it in, yes.
You know, that's where these things will come up for you.
Yeah, so rock bottom then, another sort of... cliche, but it's there because it's true. People hit rock bottom.
Yes.
What was yours?
Like, I had a couple of ups and downs throughout the years, but in 2020, that's when I completely lost everything. Family, jobs, friendships, money. I had nothing. You know, so that's rock bottom.
And if people said to you, that's it, Sean, can't do anymore.
Good luck. Yeah.
Don't want to hear from you anymore.
Yeah.
Don't text me, don't phone me, don't drive at the door.
Sure, I couldn't blame them.
Yeah.
You know, at the time you'd be booking and kicking, but like you look back now and it's not fair.
Mm.
What you do, you know.
But your mother made one last attempt to help you.
Yeah.
What did she do?
When I had given up on myself, she hadn't given up on me. You know, so if she hadn't have done that, like I probably wouldn't be where I am today, like so.
So she asked you to speak to a friend of hers.
Yeah, so there was a friend of hers that actually worked in Tiglin and he was actually at her church and he was giving a testimony, kind of like a little life story, like what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And he had been through the whole thing of addiction and out the other side, and he was working for Tiglin. And my mum asked him if he'd come and talk to me. Like, you know, he didn't know me. So I don't know, I didn't know him, like, and I don't know, whatever about it, I agreed to it.
And what was it though? What was there, something in particular he said?
No. I hadn't even been talking to him.
All right.
So it was my mum had said to me, look.
Oh, you agreed to meet him? Yes, yeah.
She said to me, will you go and talk to this fella?
Yeah.
He might be able to help you. And I just said, yeah. You know, I don't know why, but I did. So I met him in Swords. He travelled up from the men's centre in Ashford, and he had referral forms for me to fill out to go into Tig Lane. I didn't even know what Tig Lane was. He gave me a bit of a background about it, and what he said to me was, he said, like, the best way to think of it is, he says, this is your golden ticket, that bit of paper in my hand. Because he could see me, you know, I was physically, emotionally and mentally done, you know, so...
And where were you living at the time?
I was in my house at the time in Swords, yeah. So, I don't know, I took the form off and I filled it out. And I just said to myself, look, I didn't even know if I was going to go or not.
Yeah.
I just filled it out and gave it back to him. And I started ringing into Tig Lane then, every day.
Because you have to apply to get in.
So you go on to, when you do your referral, you go on to a board, and there could be up to 100 people on that board ringing in to get into Tig Lane.
Right, sort of a list, a waiting list.
So I rang every day for about 5 months.
And were you still doing cocaine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Worse than I was before.
But still, you got it together to ring them every day.
Yeah.
Wow.
Every morning, yeah.
First thing you did?
First thing I did. Well, probably the second thing I did. But I phoned in for 5 months straight.
So from that then you were serious about...
I knew I needed change, but I was afraid to change.
And what age were you at this stage?
I was 24.
Right, so you'd done a good few years of hard drugs then. Yeah. So Tig Lane, it's interesting. It was set up in 2008.
Yeah.
It's a long-term thing. 16 months. So you're not in and out in 4 weeks. And you knew this, that you were in for the long haul.
Yeah.
Right. So you mentioned Ashford already. What happens there?
So when you get into Ashford, you do a 9-month programme up there. There's different phases throughout the programme. But it mainly focuses on, you'd have a one-to-one key worker that would go through things which on a weekly basis.
And initially, are they... Because I would imagine there's some unfinished business from the real world, if you like.
Yeah.
So they help you sort that out.
Yeah, like they have a lot of family support, and there's a lot of people in the background work up there that you wouldn't even know when you're there. You know, they'd be contacting your family to let them know you're there, and they'll try build bridges back for you with bridges you've burnt.
Right.
So...
That's hugely important.
Very important, because I'd say without that, I wouldn't have my own family back in my life.
Mm.
You know, and I didn't even know they were doing this on my behalf. Uh-huh. Like,
because if you get clean and then you're not dumped, but you're back out in the real world and you've nobody to support you,
you have a very small chance of
not going
of succeeding.
Back yeah.
So,
and it's residential.
Yeah, so it's residential for 9 months in Ashford. And as I said, you have different phases throughout the programme.
All men.
Right. So they have a separate women's centre as well. Yeah. And they also run the Lighthouse in town, which is an outreach service for the homeless.
Mm.
They do up to 200, 300 meals a day for the homeless. So it's a really good organisation.
And then you go to where in Wicklow?
So Greystones.
Right.
Yeah. So
in those 7 months in Ashburn, 9 months, sorry.
In Ashford, yeah.
In Ashford. Did you feel like sprinting?
Of course.
Yeah.
Because that's all I knew how to do.
Yeah.
Was run. You know, but there's no running from it up there. You have to make a decision that you're either in or you're out. And I was in.
Mm.
There was no more running. Like, I had to fix this. Well, try anyway. Give it a shot. I had nothing to lose.
Yeah. As you said, you were at rock bottom.
Yeah.
And you were thinking, this is it. For my life.
Yeah.
Not much of a life.
No.
No. So the 9 months then, and it's sort of these sort of progress, graduate out to Wicklow.
Yeah. Yeah. So you kind of, it goes in three phases up in Ashford. So the first phase, you'd kind of have visits. You know, your family come up and see you kind of once a month.
Mm.
You get you back doing things like that. Then the second phase, you'd have a day out every month where you could go home, see your family, or you could go to Greystones, slowly reintegrating you back into normal life.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the last phase, you'd have weekends home. So I think that's a key important thing I thought up there, because being away from the real world for so long. And when you go into it, a completely different mindset, it can be very overwhelming. So I think that...
So small steps back in, yeah. And there's trust. They've built up a trust with you as well.
Yeah.
That they can trust you to go away for the weekend.
Yeah, and come back and...
Yeah.
You know.
How do you protect yourself from the world that you've left behind?
So like I said at the start, there's three things. People, places and things.
Right, uh-huh. Right.
So if you end up with the wrong people in the wrong place, you're going to do the wrong things.
Uh-huh. People, places and things.
It's the main one.
Right.
For me, anyway.
So that's it. So there'll be red flags then.
Yeah.
Floating over certain people's heads and certain places. And
yeah, but like when you go through Tiglin, they will equip you with the tools to deal with these situations. You know, because before you couldn't, like.
Yeah. What sort of tools did they equip you with?
Well, they'll show you, like, suppose when you're working one-to-one with a key worker for the guts of nearly 2 years,
yeah,
from start to finish, you always have someone by your side to guide you. And if you have any issues, you go and speak to him about, and he could offer you solutions on how to deal with these things and stuff that you could be worried about that could happen.
So, and would the key workers be recovering addicts as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. And is that important?
I think so, because I find it very easier to relate to someone that has been through the same thing I have, if not worse. Like, you know, I don't have it worse off. Just people have way worse situations than me. But I think it comes down to, at the end of the day, if your life is unmanageable due to a substance, we're all in the same boat. Yeah. It doesn't matter what substance it is.
So we started there, the rise at the Cove and Greystones. Now you're a qualified barista and you're a supervisor in the cafe. Yeah. And that's run by Tiglin as well, is it?
Yeah, so Tiglin owned the cafe. So there was a conversation between the CEO, Phil Thompson, and the chairman, Aubrey McCarthy, about setting up a cafe. Also, the Wicklow County Council were involved in that as well. They wanted to create a community space where the residents of Greystones could mingle with people from Tiglin that they also support. So it was kind of like, the idea was for it to be a community hub to kind of break barriers between people, you know, and let the people know who's living in.
Because there would be prejudice, I suppose, yeah, towards people who are addicts. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So it's working out really well.
Like, very well. Very, right. Like, the cafe has been a big success.
And for you?
Like, the piece you have today, you know, you couldn't buy it.
Right. Just tell me a little bit before we finish about the atmosphere then in both Ashford. I always get the mix up. Ashford and in Greystones, in the house. Because it's all of these men recovering from addiction.
We have a great laugh.
Yeah, you're smiling there to yourself.
Yeah, like I've had some good times up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, good times with good people.
Right.
Sober. You know, it's some things you remember for the rest of your life. Yeah. So, like, it's given me a new lease of life, like, you know.
Your golden ticket.
Yeah.
And are you fearful that it'll come back again?
It's always there.
Is it?
It's always at the door.
Is it? Yeah.
But it's whether you're willing to act on it or not is a different thing.
Yeah.
And at the minute, I'm not willing to give up what I have, you know.
Okay. You know, there's a Citizens' Assembly meeting now about the future of legislation around drug use in this country.
Yeah.
What do you think? Hands in the air. Yeah.
Like, it's one of them things. It'll be very hard changed.
Yeah.
Because, right. You know, it's no matter where you go.
And prohibition doesn't work. We know that.
No.
Right, Sean, good to see you in such good health and good spirits.
Yeah.
Great work been done by Tiglin. That's Sean O'Reilly there. And if you want an oat milk cortado, he'll make a good one for you out in the Rise at the Cove and Greystones. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good Marion, thank you very much. 515-51RayRT.ie. Sean is amazing. We all love him and admire him. A great smiler, says that person. And I missed the start of this interview, so don't know your guest name. Sean was the name. But Sean O'Reilly, but huge congratulations to him on his recovery. He speaks so wonderfully of his journey and I wish him continued success. The coffee shop sounds like a wonderful idea and we need more of them. And Sean is an absolute gentleman. He's always in great form. He makes the best coffee with the friendliest smile. He genuinely brightens my day every time I see him. He's so kind and encouraging. He's a gem of a human. It's a privilege to know him, says Jamie. So there you go, all good. And on frogs, Anne and Clane, talking about frogs as we were at the start of the show, my pond is like a jacuzzi for weeks every February with them mating. All right. When I read it first, I thought you had a jacuzzi full of frogs. No, your pond is like a jacuzzi. Fair enough. My youngest grandson spends the rest of the year going around with one on his head, one in his hands and carrying some in containers of water. He'll give them all names and they love sitting on top of his hair. Happy to sit for ages. I have pictures, says Anne Clane. That's great, very funny. Yeah, a frog on the head is worth two and there's something. Okay, it's time for the Who Done It quiz. Two quizzes are standing by to answer three whodunit questions and a prize. And it's a two-night stay for two people in one of the I Knew A Collection four-star hotels. They're all over the country. The Hibernian Hotel in Kilkenny, the Tullamore Court Hotel, the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, the Fairways in Dundalk, and any one of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. Inua.ie, Inua.ie, all over the country. And hello. Marie?
Marie.
Marie Hand. Hi, how are you? And you're in.
I'm good. How
you're
are
in,
you?
Good. You're in Kilcool in County Wicklow.
I am.
Which is famous for?
Glenroe.
Yes. And say that again. Famous for. Oh, so hold on. Hold on. Famous for what?
Glenroe.
Just happened to have it there on the cart, so I said I might as well milk it. Yeah, but things have moved on. I was down there. Is the farm still open and can people still visit it?
Yes, it is. It's open, and especially at Easter, they do a great Easter hunt. There's a shameless plug for them.
Aha. I remember meeting a large pig down there, the very large pigs.
I can't comment on that. I can't comment on the fat pigs. I can't comment on them, but they're nice horses.
I can't comment on the size of the pig race. That's great. How are things in Wicklow today?
Good, busy. It's busy. I was working up until I rang, never expecting to get through. I was dumbstruck because I ring every day,
right?
Because I listen to you between you and Joe every day when I'm in the car working,
right?
And I was amazed to get through.
And what do you work at?
I run a contract cleaning company called Blitz Cleaning.
So the radio is your friend.
It is, yes, absolutely. Especially, well, between 2FM and Radio 1.
And people are glad to see you coming, aren't they?
Delighted,
yes.
Especially today. We did what we call our blitz, which is a deep clean. We clean every surface in the house for a woman who's about to have her first baby.
Oh.
So that's always wonderful to leave a house from an expecting mother. And it's a great present. If any of the any mothers out, any relatives of the mothers, new mothers out there. A voucher for Blitz Cleaning.
There you go.
Is better than a baby grow.
Well, I was just about to say it. You can get any number of baby grows, but very few people will get a voucher for a contract cleaner like Blitz Cleaning. Yeah.
Blitz Cleaning. Yeah. Shameless plug.
Five shameless plugs.
Not a businesswoman for nothing. Right?
Yeah. You're having a hot bath tonight.
I am. My back's killing me.
Is it?
I'm an older lady these days, and I have a terrible staff problem. Just trying to get staff, so I'm doing the work myself.
Aha! Be careful now with your back, because
It
just stays with you. So will that give you some relief?
Yeah, nothing that a hot bath with Epsom salt.
Epsom salt, right? Okay, great. You're up against Laura Lydon in Galway. Hello, Laura.
Hi. Hello, Laura. Hi. How are you? How's things?
Are you related to Johnny? John Lydon? No.
I think a distant cousin.
Oh, are
I
you?
Think his.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. I think some like a very distant cousin. Well, that's what I tell everyone anyways.
Yeah, well, he was flying his Irish flag there for the Eurovision, wasn't he? So
I thought it was good. Yeah, I thought it was a very good song.
I thought it was a really good song. Probably not a Eurovision song, but the story behind it is just lovely and it's stuck in your head. It's very, very poignant.
Yeah. No, lovely sound to it, I thought.
Yeah. Now, what are you up to today?
To Today I am at work. I work at Bridges Garden in just past Mycullen in Galway. And I'm just here with the girls at work. We have Martina and Sarah there outside the back door, and Lisa here as well in the shop. So we're just all on tenterhooks here now, seeing one of us is on the radio.
So Bridges Gardens, is it a garden centre?
No, it's not. It's a Celtic-themed garden. We have an 11-acre garden, and in the centre of the gardens, there's four landscape gardens that represent the fire festivals of Samhain, Imbolc, Beltane and Lunasa. So you kind of walk through the four Celtic gardens and learn the story about the fire festivals and Celtic heritage. And then you have the wider 11 acres then, and woodland and wildflower meadows. And you can, there's a play area as well for the kids, you know. So that's kind of what we are. And we're just kind of gearing up now for the season ahead.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it is nice. Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah, and it's sort of a tourist attraction, is it? Or people come out from Galway, or who are your clients?
Yeah. Well, we get tour groups from overseas. We get school tours as well. We do lovely educational school groups. And then we get like local families as well, just coming out to use the facilities, maybe have a bit of lunch and have a little run around, just kind of check with nature and just get out and hear all the...
There you go, Bridget's Gardens. And speaking of running around, you've taken to the running, have you?
Yeah, I did. I did the operation transformation since January, actually, gone there. So Sunday morning, I managed to run my first 5K, which was great. Like, my first time doing it non-stop, like, you know.
Yeah,
without
well done.
Doing a bit of walking. Thanks. Yeah, it was great. I really enjoy it.
No, that's a great achievement. Next up, you'll do a 10K, and then before you know it, you'll be doing a half marathon, and then in October, you'll be on the streets of Dublin to run the Dublin Marathon. That's what's going to happen. There you go.
Maybe I'll keep it.
No pressure. Okay, so Marie and Laura, three questions each. I'll give you the category, and then I'll ask you, do you want a clue or not? If you go for a clue, you get one. If you go without a clue, you get two if you answer correctly. And whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. If it's a draw on points, we will go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Good luck, Laura.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Marie. First category is music. Do you want a clue or not?
No.
No. Okay. Who is this, Marie?
Ronan Keating
is the correct answer for 2 points. Well done. Good stuff. And Claxon, there you go. Thank you. Now, Laura, music for you. Do you want a clue?
No.
Okay. For 2 points, who is this?
Enya.
Say again?
Enya,
yeah. We'll play it out, will we? Just for, yeah. We'll play. There you go, it is Enya. And did you know her real name is Etna Padraigín Ní Vreanáin?
Ostunagall.
No. That was the clue. But you didn't need a clue and you got two. Both of you got two. Well done. Good start. And we're on to question number two. TV hosts it is, Marie. Television hosts.
I won't take a clue.
You won't take a clue. Okay, who is this?
Oh, geez. Hugh Jackman is amazing because he's always exactly the same. And Tom Hanks, all of these guys. They're like real... They're sort of as normal as you can be.
Lorraine, it is. Lorraine Kelly. Yes, you didn't need to hear it in its entirety. The Scottish Queen of Breakfast TV, Lorraine Kelly. Thank you. 2 points for you. Laura, you can wait till the end if you like, so we can hear the whole clip.
Okay, fair enough.
Because they've gone to an awful lot of trouble upstairs to get the clips out and find them and all that sort of thing, so we might as well play them in their entirety. Okay, TV host.
Okay.
Do you want a clue or not, Laura?
I'd better not go for the clue, though, no.
Okay. Who is this?
I don't know if I'd give any advice, because, you know, we all feel that way. The people who survive, and I've been very lucky, I've just persevered in a long career, but I think the people who survive, they survive because they eventually become themselves or a version of themselves on screen. You know what I mean? You kind of you enjoy what you're doing and it isn't like you're faking it too much. So I would say, you know, try and be yourself on it, enjoy it. But I suppose the other thing is try and remember the guest names. That's important.
Who's that?
Oh, goodness me. It is... Oh, Jonathan Ross.
Yes, I'll take it, Will. It was still echoing there in the background. Jonathan Ross is the correct answer. Okay. So, two each. Two. So it's four all. Four all. It's down to the wire. Marie, the final category is celebrity chefs. Celebrity chefs.
Now, no, I better stick with no clue.
Okay, going for a clean sheet of 6 points. Good luck with this for 2 points. Who is this?
The great thing about street food is anything goes. The only rule is they've got to be really fast and really tasty. Now, these tacos mix a Mexican and Japanese flavours into a delicious, meaty mouthful.
Who's that?
Gordon Ramsay.
It is Gordon Ramsay. Straight in there, yes. Wow, you can't do any more, Marie. You got 6 out of 6. Laura, you've a question in hand, and you know what you have to do.
Yeah, I have to go without the clue.
You do. Celebrity chefs.
Yeah.
Okay. Who is this celebrity chef?
I mean, not that I want to be dizzyingly eclectic in the kitchen, but I think it is impossible to cook, if you like eating, without borrowing a bit from here, a bit from there. And these flatbread pizzas are a vaguely Eastern Mediterranean take on, guessed it, an Italian idea.
Who's that?
Is it Nigella Lawson?
It is Nigella Lawson. Look at you two, yes. Well done to you both. Now, on another day, Marie and Laura, you would have done enough to win, but unfortunately today you're up against an equally good contestant, opponent. So it's down to a tiebreaker. We asked you this question before you went on air. I'm going to repeat it now for our listeners. And whoever answered closest to the correct answer is today's winner. So, before you came on air, this is the question we asked you. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to walk from British Bay in County Galway to Achill Island? Sorry, I'll do that again. British Bay in County Wicklow. Did I say Galway? I do apologise. British Bay in County Wicklow to Achill Island in County Mayo. And you said, Marie?
I think it was 91
hours. 91 hours. It's 328 kilometres. Your guess, Laura, was...
I think I said 270 hours.
You did.
I think.
You did say 270 hours, which is what? What? 11 days. Okay. The correct answer is 67 hours. So, Marie, you are the closest. Laura, sorry about that.
No worries. We're
going to send you out a Ray D'Arcy Show Keep Cup for the staff room. And when we're down that way, we're definitely going to visit Bridget's Gardens in Galway.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
And Ray, can I just say hello to my son? He's recovering from an operation today. He had a tonsillectomy, and I know he's on the couch at home listening. So just get well soon, Xavier.
What's his name?
Xavier.
Vaser.
Xavier, Xavier. Yeah.
Okay, right. Get well soon, and I'm sure you will. And it's jelly and ice cream all the way. Laura,
yeah.
Well done.
Yeah,
see you now. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye. Marie, well done.
I can't believe that. I ring the show every bloody day, and I never get through. And every day I know all the answers.
You knew them all today.
And I knew them all today.
So
brilliant.
That
just doesn't say much for all the television and all the music I listen to.
It's paid off. It's paid off.
Thank you. Yeah.
INUA.ie. You can go and see what's in store for you. There's loads of 4-star hotels all over the country for you to choose from.
I'm actually staying in one in April, so that's
right.
In the Hills. I think it's Hillsview.
The Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So you might book in again for that. Well done, Marie.
I will.
See you now.
Brilliant.
Bye.
Thank
bye.
You.
Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, how often do you wash your clothes? Maybe it's not something you'd like to admit, but in truth, to make our clothes last longer, we need to be washing them less than we are. And how many of us use fabric softener correctly? Well, we're talking clothing longevity now with Laura DeBarra. How are you doing, Laura?
Hi, how are you?
Clothing longevity. Two words I've never put together before, but there you go.
Get used to them now. It's the hot topic.
Is it the hot topic, right?
It is.
Yeah. So most of us are making mistakes when it comes to washing our clothes. Is that your take on it?
Yeah, I think so. My background is in fashion. That's what my degree is in. And I worked in fashion supply for years. And what is the main thing at the moment is that our clothes are different to the generations before us. Our machines are different. We're washing at different temperatures. We're washing with different products. We're washing different fabrics. And we're washing too much. The kind of like perception of clean is a massive thing these days. You know, that like to be clean, you have to smell not like what the thing smells of, but of a chemical. I'll get into that another time. But anyway, but mainly what it is that our clothes are a lot weaker now because they're a lot cheaper and the quality's less. And a lot of people will say to you, oh, wash your clothes less, but they don't tell you how or why.
Okay.
And how you can make your clothes not feel like you're walking around in filthy clothes, you know? Because a lot of fashion advices can be quite, can come from a quite privileged point of view, like when people say like reduce your fast fashion, but like what if that's your budget or they do the size or it's your accessibility? Instead, we should learn how to take care of our clothes.
Okay.
And then you'll buy less, right?
And that's what you're going to do today. Okay.
That's what I'm going to do. Right. So like, number one is washing too much. We're just firing everything into the washing machine. It's a lot to do with like marketing and the perception of things being clean. So washing less is vital. And if you must wash, low, low temperatures. I know a lot of focus was on lower temperature washes with the price of how much a wash was going to be. But it's also much better for your clothes. And fabric softener is something we just have to start ditching. Like people go crazy when I say this, but fabric softener is not good for the longevity of your clothes.
Wow, shock horror.
Because listen, there's people screaming.
I can hear it over here. I would imagine it just from watching the ads and listening to people that we feel like we're doing our clothes a favour by putting fabric softener into the washing machine with them. We're not.
Let me serve you some tea on this, right? You know the way usually in the marketing of fabric softener, it's like babies and towels. They're like the main things you see when you're looking at fabric softener adverts. Turn your fabric softener around and most packets will tell you not to use on children's sleepwear and not to use on terry cloth. And terry cloth is towels.
Right. That's
and it's
mad.
Mainly because how it works, like the background of fabric softener, it was brought in during production because dyes were making the hand feel of certain natural fabrics very harsh and they had to bring in something to kind of like make it smoother and it had to not wash off with water. So it had to be oil based. Usually it's an animal fat, etc., etc. So now we have it in the home because we're not drying outside as much. Most people don't have as much outdoor space as before. And this time of year, people aren't using their dryers because of the cost of living, etc. So fabric softener is becoming a hot topic. But it's a coating that's over the fibres that are in the clothing. And it's making them, if they're supposed to be flame resistant, it's affecting the flame resistant coating. So that's why they say don't do it on baby clothes.
Yeah.
Second of all, it's affecting the absorption. You need absorption in most of your clothing for a few reasons. Usually your natural fibres, bedding, towels, underwear, cotton, things that sit against the body, soak up your juices, basically. You want them to, well, we have to have it. You should be wearing these things under your clothes anyway so that you don't have to wash the outer layer.
Yeah.
Like knits, you should never have against your skin. And then when you want to put them into the wash, you need them to release those protein stains, right? That will get the garment clean. But if you've got a coating on that garment or you're applying a coating over it, the next wash, it's not going to be able to get to the dirt.
Okay.
And you know that kind of like damp, wet dog
smell
that clothes sometimes.
Can I ask you this question? Are there any clothes that benefit from fabric softener?
Well, I think if it makes you happy and it's doing something like major in your life where you cannot let go of the fabric softener, grand, as long as you're aware of what you're doing. However,
that's a real diss. That's a real diss. If it makes you happy, go ahead.
No, I have a friend who literally loves fabric softener and it does genuinely, she gets a buzz from it. I'm not going to judge her using it. That's what I mean. Like if it really is giving you a buzz, as long as you know, like, okay, I'm not going to use it on my gym gear because then it's not going to be as effective.
Yes.
I'm not going to use it on my bed linen. So like she knows how and when to use it. They say delicates usually. And some knitwear, mainly wool, is what you're supposed to use it on. But wool should only be washed like once or twice ever. And delicates, you might sweat a bit in them, eh?
Okay. Well, while we're on those sort of products, you have those sheets that you put in sometimes. And then we have those things that look like snowballs. What about those sort of things? What do they do?
So there's different types of fabric softeners, like things that soften fabrics. There's a liquid fabric softener that you throw in with your wash.
Yes.
It goes through in the rinse stage, stays on like a grease, like a coating.
Yeah.
Then you've got balls in the dryer because how clothes get crispy is during the drying stage. That's when they're redoing their bonds. So if you put a ball in your dryer, it beats the clothes up a bit more and gets the fibres moving. And then you've got the sheets then that almost kind of do like a static effect. How softener is supposed to work is by lifting the fibres up and sending them out to greet your skin, make it softer and hold more air inside. What you can actually do, and it's going to be no surprise that I say this, if you add a cup of vinegar to the rinse stage, and I swear, if you add a cup of distilled wine.
We nearly got to half four without vinegar.
It'll never happen. If you add a cup or a half cup, not every single wash, but if you're putting in towels, bed linen, stuff like that, and you want them soft and they're going to sit against your skin, cup, half cup of vinegar at the rinse stage cycle, or just put it in a fabric softener section, and that will actually soften, whiten and brighten the garment.
Will you not smell like a chipper? No.
No, we know now vinegar dries odourless.
Right. We know. We so all know now. Well, I know now. We know now. I know now. Yes. Okay. Okay. So that's all really good information. So lower temperature when you're washing.
And it keeps it bright as well. If you've got prints and bright clothes, if you love to wear bright clothes and you want to keep them bright, just keep your temperatures low.
Low, right. No fabric softener. And do we decide on the snowballs and the sheets? Are they okay?
You don't need the extra expense of them. If you want your clothes to kind of like not feel as crispy afterwards, put them on a synthetic wash. There's not as many rotations. It doesn't change direction as much, the drum, so they're not mangling each other. And you can always put your synthetics in a separate bag. It's just going to keep your clothes lasting longer and smelling better.
Okay. Now, we've washed them and they're fine and we put them in the wardrobe and we don't see them for another 6 months. And that was the length of time that somebody came up with. But when do we know that it's time to clean things out, and where do we bring them? Do we bring them to charity shops? Do we bring them to those places that are up beside the bottle banks, or where do we bring them?
I think when it comes to like donating or like getting rid of some clothes, a lot of people just think you put it in a black bag and you send it somewhere. But what we're not doing, and what we should in this day and age be a lot more conscious of, is that we have to divide our donation or our bag of cast-offs basically into sections. Like if things are well worn barely worn and new, think about sending them to places like shelters where they accept that level of clothing. Like I always give my winter coats that are in good condition to a woman's shelter around the corner for me. You ring ahead, ask what sizes they're looking for, ask what exact garments they're looking for, and only give them what they ask for, or you're giving a charity a cost to get rid of your rubbish basically. Then when next stop should be charity shops. What is sellable? What can they make money from? They will also have to send rubbish away. You're giving them a cost if you're just dumping stuff on them. And then you have the bins that you see in car parks. Google what the bin is doing. Is it a for-profit recycling bin, or is it part of a charity? What's the percentage they give to a charity? And bag things up in groups. Put all your cottons together, because they divide those by recycling, fibre and reuse. And bag things into, you can put a label on it, because there's a human sorting this stuff at the end of the day that you put away. And you can do your bit by sorting things into groups. Well worn, you can put rags in and put it in a bag called rags as well.
Okay, just because you worked in the fashion industry and that's your background, do things not come round? Because I'm thinking last week I had to get into a tuxedo, whatever, black tie.
Yeah.
And I thought that black tie events had been consigned to history, you know, after the pandemic. But anyway, they're still around. And when I went looking, I thought I had one with a sort of a narrow leg, but I didn't. And I ended up going to the thing with a slightly flared pair of trousers.
Oh, stunning.
Yeah, I know.
Stunning. They're very in now.
That's what I was thinking.
Very in.
So that's a roundabout way of saying, would you not be better off holding on to things because they eventually come back into fashion? No.
Listen, you've got to remember, this is anything that's within, you walk through the door of your home, you're deciding what's in there. So if you want to hang on to that suit, if you're wearing those flares in 20 years when I see you, I'm not going to judge you. If you're loving those flares and you're kicking around in them, it's no problem.
Yeah. Well, he's my hero, Harry Styles. So next thing you'll see me in one of those jumpsuits with no chest.
I can't wait.
Yeah. It's not going to happen. Now, nothing smells better than clothes dried outside, says that person, which is, yeah, a good comment. Can you ask Laura how to keep towels soft without using fabric softener or a tumble dryer, please? That's Frida.
Absolutely. So your towels are usually getting crispy because there's a buildup of minerals in them, or it's fabric softener that's on them.
Okay.
The fibres aren't able to live their best life. You can strip a crispy towel of its... Now, my husband loves a crispy towel. Oh my God, honestly, honestly, it's too much for me.
Right.
So some people love it. It's like exfoliation. What you can do is strip the fibres, the really tight fibres in that towel, of all the minerals that are in the water, hard water, with the vinegar treatment on them.
Uh-huh.
And then after, when you go to dry, shake your towel, shake your garments out, and it makes the fibres loosen before they dry. All that it does when you put towels and stuff outside is that it makes the bonds, it makes the fabric create less bonds because it's been shaken. You know, when it's dry and it doesn't
move. So
you can do that
in your inside, is what you're saying.
Yeah, okay. Inside. That's why you see people shaking when you see people in hotels and stuff in the laundry rooms. They're shaking everything out to get them softer.
Okay. Most towel manufacturers advise not to use fabric softener. Also, soda softener does not mix with our hard water in Ireland and it congeals in the machine, says that person.
There we
go. And last comment, I stopped using fabric softener last year because it was leaving oily stains on my clothes. I will never go back. There is literally no difference without it. Vinegar for the win. There you go.
What a queen. What a queen.
What a queen. Well, that was so informative. Laura de Barra, thank you so much. You are indeed the gaff goddess. Thanks, Laura. Talk to you soon. Mike. Bye bye.
Speak soon.
That's it from us. Cormac is on the way with Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.